You're listening to Fascinating Women with Mark Lori. And now, Mark Lori.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Mark Lori from Inner Spirit Photography. Now, of course, I'm on the Fascinating Women podcast. My guest today is Sharon Miller. Shannon Miller. Is Shannon, I'm going to do that again. That was really bad. Hello, everyone, and welcome. I'm Mark Lori from the Fascinating Women podcast. Normally, I'm behind a camera with Inner Spirit Photography, but today I'm talking to Shannon Miller through our Fascinating Women podcast, and it is really cool. She has a woman who's been on an unusual journey. We'll start off with that kind of thing there. And that's she's nodding. You can't see this, but she's nodding to me. That'd be local. So Shannon's gone through an arc that wound up at one point with her daughter at 21, was it?
23,
passing away. And that brought a whole well of grief to it. And she's one of the few people that took that path of grief and actually turned it into something to teach people how to also walk through it. And so we'll be touching that today, but we're going to start off looking at what kind of background shaped her to be able to take that step. Does that sound like a good place to start, Shannon?
Yeah, it sounds like a great place to start. Hi.
Hi. It's so good to have you here.
Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Anytime we can get really cool people to talk to, I'm always a happy camper.
Well, thank you.
So you've got two grown children right now still?
Yes, okay. Yes.
And when did you get married? When did that all start?
Oh, that all started, actually, we were high school sweethearts.
Oh, really?
So, yes. So we got married when we were 23. Mm-hmm. And he is a geologist. So, of course, we moved to Calgary. I'm originally from Saskatchewan. Yeah, missing the wide open spaces every once in a while, but yeah, so we moved here and started a family right away, and yeah, ended up having three beautiful children, and the marriage didn't work out, but we still raised the kids together. Right. That was never an issue there, and yeah, and so the kids spent the majority of their time with me just close to school, mm-hmm. and right. You know, it was just easier for them to have a consistent place to stay, I think, more than anything, especially through the teenage years when it gets kind of, you know, a little crazy.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I think we look back at our teenage years the same way as when we were trying to teach kids something through the teenage years.
Yes.
So you come up with a very particular viewpoint to help people through this, but going back even before you were married, what kind of critical things do you think happened in your childhood that sort of shaped some of your viewpoints or values to?
Well, I didn't know it at the time. I had no words for it as right. a child. Of course, you don't know mm-hmm. what you don't know.
Right.
But it's just naturally, I don't know how to quite say it. I would pick on people's feelings. I'd pick mm-hmm. up on them if they were sad or if they were upset and it could be strangers. And as a child, I didn't know that everybody didn't feel that. I did. So I would go up to people and say, you know, why are you so sad? Or, you know, and eventually my mom said, you got to stop doing that. It makes people uncomfortable. But in hindsight, I see that I think was a starting point to just be able to pick up on people's mm-hmm. feelings and their pain and being able to be one of those people that can just sit with somebody when they're feeling whatever it is they're feeling and not kind of take it on as my own, just right. allow them to feel.
Just kind of acknowledge it. So that was from mm-hmm. how old were you when you started realizing you had that ability?
The very first time I realized that I was doing it and not everybody was doing it was when I was 5. And that's when my mom said, don't do that. You know, you could say it to somebody and they might get mad. So safety wise, stop doing that. But really just even with my friends, as I got a little bit older, you know, the high school ages and even just early 20s, mm-hmm. I quite often would have people confide in me quite deeply, even though we weren't necessarily friends. And so I'm not sure if it's the energy I gave off or just I didn't run away when they would say something that was touching on a pain point maybe. And because I think as humans, we kind of make sure that the person is okay to talk to, make sure that they're a safe person to talk to.
Yep.
So we just kind of give hints. And when that person picks up on the hints, then I think we feel safe to start sharing.
That's I think that's pretty accurate, because we want to be open. That's the whole, you know, open transparency, you know, feel my pain, feel my energy, feel whatever kind of stuff is. But I think behind all that, still part of the brain that sits back there and goes, you know, is this a wise person to talk, to share these things with?
Right. Right.
And then you go forward what you feel good.
I think too, that we fear judgment from others. You know, they might just say, you know, it's not that big of a deal. You shouldn't have to worry about that or whatever. You should be over it, whatever your pain point is.
Well, that's true. A lot of people aren't comfortable or believe you should, you know, move on, you know, pick yourself up. Here's 10 minutes. Good. It's done.
Yeah.
stuff of that. Your arm healed by then. So now your mind should have healed.
Right. Exactly. And I think I experienced that, even just from moving from Saskatchewan to Alberta, because I grew up in the same house and then I lived in an apartment and then we moved here. So I was constantly, I had come from a very large family. So I was constantly surrounded by support system and friends and love, and then I moved somewhere where I knew no one but my husband. But he knew lots of people because he went to school with all the people, right? So I didn't realize it, but I was grieving leaving what I knew. So even then it was like, oh, it's not a big deal, just go enjoy yourself. And you know, those kind of comments, they were trying to be supportive, but when I just really wanted somebody to acknowledge that I was going through a hard time. That's all I want.
Sometimes all through life, that's often just what it takes, is just, you know, sort of see me here, you know, let me kind of be into it. I don't think through all the different ages, we sort of assign the obvious grief when someone passes away, or if someone is dying from something, or there's extreme kind of pain. But the subtle things that sort of prepare us for us from the passing of a pet, but also like you're saying, even, you know, for young kids growing up, the loss of a relationship, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend kind of thing, changing schools, you really liked what was there. And often it, sometimes what you're leaving behind is painful, but it's familiar. And I so I think it kind of kicks in there. Mm-hmm. Have you had any quotes? I love quotes. Have you had any quotes that have kind of gotten you through over the years? They're kind of like your go-to quotes?
Well, there's one. It's by Najwa Zeban. She's a writer. And let me just try and remember it. These mountains you're carrying, you were only meant to climb. And
brilliant.
Isn't it brilliant? And I actually messaged her and thanked her for sharing that, because I think she shared it online and that's how I saw it. And so I got a little bit of history from her about it. We started communicating a bit. And it has nothing to do with grief. It has something to do with just, you know, carrying a lot of struggles, and you're not supposed to keep them with you. You're just supposed to, you know, work through, like climb through them or whatever. Yes. But it was significant for me. It was probably 3 years into my grief journey that I came across it. And it was just one of those that really hit me. And it was like, oh, it was almost permission to not have to carry this huge grief with me, that it was okay. I really interpreted it for myself, and it was like it was saying, it's okay to put it down, it's okay to move through it. You know, you don't love your daughter any less if you want to work through this grief. You don't have to stay in the darkness,
right?
And that was huge for me, because again, society is wanting you to get over it, or I think just society in general just doesn't understand grief and how it's a forever thing. It doesn't mean you're going to be sad and in the darkness and forever not living, but you carry it with you, because it's just love. It's just a different form of love. So this gave me permission to branch up, to open up.
Yeah, that's anything with a powerful quote is it any three people will take it three different ways, you know, and they'll take it to different depths. Some people it's kind of glib, like, it's kind of cool, I'll have to put that up in the wall for 5 days. And other people go, oh my gosh, that resonates in my soul. That's going to be part of my wall for 500 days. You know, and they just, I've got a couple over the years that have driven me, that they just really, really stick. And it's impressive. You can remember such a complicated name. Usually I'm left remembering the the quote, and I struggle to recall it. That's how come Google's so cool.
Yes.
Jump into it. which is really kind of neat. So who inspires you? Somebody, has that changed?
It has changed, mm-hmm. definitely. Before my daughter is Katie, her name is Katie, that okay. died. Before Katie died, she had struggles of her own. Mm-hmm. And so we found her help. Mm-hmm. And she went openly and willingly, and she just was wanting help for so long. Mm-hmm. And so I was always so amazed by her strength to be willing to go and sit in the muck, mm-hmm. sit in her pain, just so that she could, have a happier life. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, wow, I was so amazed by her strength. Mm-hmm. And I guess I'm saying it's my children that have really inspired me, because also my oldest daughter, mm-hmm. who is just, I describe her as like the world's sunshine.
Right.
She's just the happiest person, and she cares deeply. And, if you're, she has the same experiences as I. Actually, all my kids, what I've come to learn now, are empaths. Mm-hmm. We're all empaths. So she also recognizes that. So she's a beautiful listener. And it's just, it really touches my heart to see her sit with someone and just let them share their truth with her with no judgment. And yeah. I think in today's society with social media and everything, there's so much judgment.
Oh.
And she doesn't.
Yeah.
So, that's very inspirational. But, also the basics, like even Oprah. I mean, I know that might seem like a crazy one to choose, but she came from struggle and lived her truth. And, now she's helping others. So besides the fact that she's probably very close to a billionaire, I have no idea. She has massive amounts of money. And that's great for her because she does something with it. I really admire that. Yeah. And I'm like, all the power to you. I don't begrudge her living a beautiful lifestyle because of all the help that she gives. And she came from struggle. Yeah. And that to me is very admirable. So anybody in my life that has experienced struggle, which is pretty much everybody in the world,
unscathed.
Yeah. And when I see that they're trying, mm-hmm. To me, that's inspirational. So it could be pretty much anybody.
I see a lot as, I'm a kind of a good news person. There's enough bad news you can bump into it so many ways and so many different times. And so I love coming across, there's Instagram that's just good news of the day. There's 500 more turtles coming off this beach than there ever was before. And there's a glacier that's getting bigger. And he finds these cute cartoons that go with it. And it's just, I just love that kind of stuff.
Me too.
Positive kind of thing. I figure, yes, I'll live the world through those kind of glasses. And when I have to stand up for something, I will do so.
Right.
And I appreciate the world does have its dark corners. You have to be wary at times. Mm-hmm. But I really do get concerned by how quickly people choose to take offense or to twist something. Like they'll say, especially on the social media, because it's so limited. Like when we're talking, I have a whole bunch of information I can choose from to decide if being sarcastic is it, are you just throwing a comment up? Because a lot of times people say something and it's just you're making noise and you really don't have any depth to it. And on Twitter or on the social media, that somebody takes it and they branch off on it, becomes massively all of a sudden gone. Really, from that, you wound up there? It's mm-hmm. kind of comment. So, yeah, so when you see people that choose to just accept. And saying a phrase I'm starting to hear is not my dog, not my fight, and then just move on.
That's a good one. I haven't heard that one.
It's been a long time. I remember it must have been 10, 15 years ago, there was a guy that used that quite a bit. He'd get like, I don't have a dog in this fight. So I'm mm-hmm. relevant to me. I'm not going to get into it. And that was weird. The thing is she came out, she's not my dog, not my fight. Don't care. Move on.
Yeah. And some people are just looking for that. Mm-hmm. Right, they just want you to join in their drama or their pain, and it's up to you to choose what you want to do.
So besides your grief work, what other kind of stuff are you curious about right now? What kind of things got your attention?
Well, that's a funny question. I've never been asked that question before, and it's only funny because I think I drive my family crazy with my questions. I have a very inquisitive mind, and it's not necessarily that I want an answer. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to understand. So that's different to me. Like, why do dogs do this? What goes through their brain? That sort of thing. But today, I mean, you know, there's some of the pandemic, obviously. Mm-hmm. I mean, just the immediate things that are going on in the world and not taking it lightly. Even the Black Lives Matter movement, I mean, that's significant. And the world needs to change. So in my own way, I've chosen to have those hard conversations, learn myself, listen to the people that I respect and admire on social media to learn from. They tell me to read this book. Okay, I do. Mm-hmm. You know, that sort of thing. So that's important to me. But, you know, all the little things, spending time with my family, mm-hmm. it's slowing down. I find the world is a very, very fast-paced world. Prior to the pandemic, honestly, like it's an awful thing and it's heartbreaking that so many people have died, all of that stuff. But in a way, we had to have it happen. Mm-hmm. So what can we do from that pain? How can we move forward? I guess that's similar to my grief work.
Yeah, just circle back.
Yeah. Hey, look at that.
It's a whole different direction, but we'll wind up to the same.
Yeah, isn't that funny? I guess that's at my soul level then, isn't it? Oh. So yeah, I mean, my family, number one priority, no matter what. So that's something that I always work on. I believe that everything needs your attention like that. If you care enough about it, you got to give attention.
There's an observation. I love philosophers and these observers of life, but one of the big ones that come out is whatever your attention goes to, you will change. Mm. So if you focus on your defects or your challenges, then you'll get more challenges. Yeah. If you focus on solutions, then you'll get more solutions. If you decide to look at your weight or at your skill set, whatever it is you want to grow, then more happens there. It's kind of like the thing.
I agree.
Go to buy a car and you've never noticed that there's nothing but, you know, Corvettes everywhere. Then all of a sudden you buy a Corvette and all of a sudden you see Corvettes on the road. It's like you become hyper aware of it.
Yes. Yes.
And I love the people who look at things, and I think that's why comics interest me, stand-up comics, mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they look at the routine, the stuff that we only, you know, brushing their teeth or, you know, how do you extract yourself from a girlfriend conversation? And then they look at it like, what's really going on? And the way it kind of goes.
Yeah, and that's so true with so many different mm-hmm. things. Even just simple conversations is, you know, like, are people just wanting those basic conversations or do they just want connection? Those are the thoughts that go through my head. These are the questions that I ask myself. And I too love comics, that the satirical ones that pick up on the everyday things and just make it front and center. Because sometimes, again, people are going through life so quickly, they're not even realizing some of those things.
Yeah.
And again, back to my grief, it is those little things that I remember that we shared as a family, you know, mm-hmm. popping popcorn and having movie night together, you know, those types of things. So it is those little things that people end up appreciating, even if they don't realize it.
Yeah.
So I think that's important.
I find a lot of people are intentionally looking for experience. Like my photography is experience-based photography. It's people come to us because they're wanting growth. They want to come to acceptance or something. And then at the end of it, they have some very amazing photographs that kind of back it up. But people are looking for deeper conversations, mm-hmm. and those, they're brave to do. Like a conversation where someone says, here's a social contract between you and me, and we're going to go below the surface. We're not going to mm-hmm. let things slide, and it's going to be scary. And they're scary because you don't often know where they're going to go.
That's right. And you have to be vulnerable to have them.
Yep, you do.
And trusting the other person's not going to be harsh. I'm not sure what, but so to me, it's a risk worth taking.
Yes, it is.
Just to have, because you, some of the relationships that get developed over some meaningful conversations mm-hmm. are incredible. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm with a group called BNI, Business Network International. And on the surface, it pretty much is a business organization to get leads and grow your business. But they have a thing called one-to-one. And the power of the one-to-one is where you, it's a structure where you sit down and you want to get to know the person at a deeper level. So because the feeling is when you do business, you interact with people you trust. Mm-hmm. And so the more you talk to someone, the more you get to know their values, the more you get to know what's motivated them. The more you're likely to go, this work should go to Ben. He could use this kind of thing. Yeah. And that's pretty powerful kind of things.
So I think to that almost shows respect, Ben, yeah. Like you develop a respect for them.
Yeah. Cause yeah, someone, you're not going to talk and share things with somebody you don't respect. It's like
right.
My time, I'm not going to tell you what, mm-hmm. what my sad points are.
Yeah.
So what three beliefs are your core beliefs that guide you, that you make your decisions based on?
Oh, that's a really good question. Oh, we can have some fun conversations. My core beliefs, mm-hmm. I've come to realize a huge core belief of mine mm-hmm. is to speak your truth. Mm-hmm. And I mean, growing up, you're always taught, be honest, don't lie. Like, I don't mean that kind of truth,
right.
But just... respect yourself, be kind to yourself. And if you do always speak your truth, then there's no backtracking. There's no, mm-hmm. Making up for wrongdoings, because if you're doing it authentically and it's who you are mm-hmm. and you're strong in who you are, mm-hmm. then, I mean, I'm not saying that you don't make mistakes and don't have to apologize, but it's still living your truth. Sorry, yeah, I keep saying that, and I know that's not explaining it very well to your listeners. But, you can go to sleep night with a clear conscience if you speak your truth, if you're not hiding. I mean, there's so much disease when you're trying to be someone who you're not, or you're trying to pretend things or hide things, or again, back to grief. If you don't express your grief and you're holding it in, it becomes toxic. Yeah. So just in general... I guess that's how I like to live my life, is truly who I am.
Speaking your truth is a tricky thing, I believe, because you have to know yourself first before you can speak your truth. And a lot of people haven't spent a lot of time with themselves to sit back and say, well, who is the authentic me? I'm trying so hard to pretend or to help or say yes to other people. What is my choice? And it's often not making a choice reveals a choice.
Yes.
And so people say, well, here's what I do. And I think, well, yeah, what don't you do? Mm-hmm. What things will you not do, or what things you shy away from? Because that also kind of finds in. The other thing with your truth I've noticed is that people always say, look, I gotta be honest. I gotta tell you the truth.
I hope you always would be. But
when they say that, I've noticed that becomes, when they, that particular phrase, like, I gotta be honest, I gotta tell you the truth, when it's, every time I heard someone say that, it's followed with, it's like, I now give myself permission to be mean to you.
Oh, yes. That's just like, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Like, they'll say something, just kidding. No, you're not.
Yeah. My dad had that. We were at a bar one time. I was really young, just legal enough to go into the bar, and we were looking for directions, and just happened to be a bar with lots of lays the night kind of thing into it. And
oh, yes.
Come up and they'd do this line. And it was kind of like, well, if you take me up on it, I was serious. And if you don't, wasn't that funny? this lady did that with my dad. My mom told me this one time. She's sitting there and she virtually made a pass at my dad, right? With my mom right in front of her.
Oh.
And so you can look at mom, so you can watch her face. He could have gone, if dad like, well, that's interesting. We would have gone that way. If Jack was like, that makes no sense. And which, cause he just over his head, right?
Right. Like, well, yeah.
He knew, but anyway, I find that interesting. When mm-hmm. people don't phrase it that way, they don't say, I'm going to tell you the truth. They tend to be more gentle, more honest, because the truth does not have to be a stick. It can be,
right.
It can be that's kind of right. gentle. So that's one. What's your second right. and third?
Not too much thought, to be honest with you. I'm a very optimistic person. Mm-hmm. I believe in gratitude. Mm-hmm. I know that's an overused phrase right now. So I don't quite like to put it that way, but I do. I try and be thankful for what, even if it's just a lesson learned from mm-hmm. something. But I feel like for most things, there's, you can find some gratitude. And I'm not saying as soon as it happens, you should be grateful. Mm-hmm. No, stop forcing people to find gratitude in horrific things or sad things or whatever. Over time, like, you'll realize, like when I was going through my divorce, I had a couple good friends that supported me. Like, yeah, my life was in the toilet. But over time, I realized, wow, I have some really great support there. Mm-hmm. So that is a basis, a core value of mine, is to try and always find gratitude in something. Yeah.
I found gratitude, most people think of gratitude in the person-to-person thing, like, I'm grateful what you just did for me. So I found gratitude exists, like, I, from a course I've been taking, and he emphasized the fact, you know, spend like 5 to 10 minutes every morning just being grateful, think of things you can be grateful with. And it changes you, if it's all like physically mm-hmm. inside, you sit back and you express yes. it out loud, even if no one's listening, because that's not the point of it. And like for myself, I'm really grateful for the studio I've got to play in. I'm, you know, grateful for the access I've got. I'm able to afford hardware. Mm-hmm. I'm able to do these kind of things, which expand my horizon. I get to meet really fascinating people. Yeah. And it's okay. Also, like every morning, and I'm going through this process, I'm grateful for my assistant Fran. I'm grateful for my wife Jan, and they all keep on coming back and just reinforce it. Yeah, not to take these people or these situations for granted, because
exactly. Mm-hmm. And also too, it just sets your tone. I mean, if you're in a space of non-gratitude, mm-hmm. it's a negative, and just your whole self then is walking around in a negative form. So like you had said earlier, you're going to pick up on all the negativity then.
Yeah.
Where if you can find a little bit of gratitude in something, at least you're inviting in some mm-hmm. gratitude.
Yeah.
What is my third one? You asked for three. I've been trying to think of what a third one is.
I think you mentioned actually your optimism.
Oh,
just, I believe, yeah. So we'll save you.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, they go together quite nicely. I mean, you can see your core beliefs aligning very nicely. But optimism, and I'm in line with you, like, optimism is a huge part of my life, no matter what happened. It's like, well, okay, so how can we make this work better? We've discovered, as an example, with optimism in the face of a challenge, when this is a simple thing, we'll have a camera that's got only one lens. And so we're mm-hmm. going to go on a really important shoot with only one lens. And that forces you out of the box.
Yes.
And when you decide to have an optimistic life, which is a choice, because you can't control what happens to you, but you can control how you react to it, which again kind of goes back to what yes. your whole yes. life drive is now. Mm-hmm. I believe. So how does optimism, when you say you're living an optimistic life, what does that look like when you say that? What sort of springs to your mind?
On the very simplest terms, I always seem to see the positive mm-hmm. as opposed to the negative.
Right.
And that is just a natural part of who I am. Where, I mean, I know a lot of people who are the opposite. And it's not that they can't be optimistic. They have to work at it. Mm-hmm. So you have to prove to me that you're not a nice person, for example.
Right.
I just assume you're a nice person. Mm-hmm. But I also feel that it opens up other doors. Mm-hmm. Doors. I'm not sure if doors is what I mean, but opportunities for other people to come in and be optimistic. It's like you're giving permission.
Yes.
For people to be happy mm-hmm. because there's not a lot of that around. Mm-hmm. You know how maybe when you're at work and people tend to get together and they just complain a lot, and that's how the basis of friendships almost, right? The negativity, and they use that and they commiserate together. I don't know what you might call it. But I've learned, and through whatever self-help, self-growth and all that, I don't have to allow that in my world.
Yeah.
So I choose to live positively or be optimistic, because I think for the most part, mm-hmm. the world's a pretty beautiful place. sometimes you have to dig around and find it.
You do. But I think you're right. There's so much beauty. There's a lot of darkness, but there's a guy that was tracking things. He was actually showing how safer the world is compared to 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. And he went through all sorts of things. So yes, we may have more drastic weather conditions, but we're able to handle it better, so we lose fewer people. And he just went down the list of things where there's fewer actual wars going on. The media and the hype makes it sound like there's more and they're more dangerous. Yeah. But he explained and he showed the numbers. There are actually fewer things going on. And so we tend to get lost in that fog of bad news, because that's, the newspapers have found that the tabloid hype sells.
Yes. Exactly.
And I used to laugh about the weather condition, because every Monday, the first thing you heard was how horrible the weekend's going to be. It's going to be a rainstorm. It's a massive. It's coming, but you stay tuned here. And they talk as if they somehow have the ability to change
it. Yeah, to fix it. Yeah.
If we get enough listeners here, we will change the rain. And so by Monday, Tuesday, it's just horrible, horrible, horrible. Then by Thursday, we're getting a break. We've got this happen. I think you haven't done anything. Like, you've actually lied about the front part of the week, the weekend.
Yeah.
And then the weekend comes, look at that. We brought you no rain. I'm going, you knew on Monday there was going to be no rain.
Yeah, totally.
It's just, there's not much money in the thing for it. So let's talk a bit about the mission you've been on, I guess you'd call it. So how long have you been doing, is it grief counseling is wrong? That's not what it is.
I tend to call it grief guiding.
Grief guidance, that's a very
good. And yeah, it's mostly just sitting with people, not just. I don't like using the word just. Grief is very difficult, as most people know. Yeah. And society in general don't like it. It's very difficult. It's uncomfortable. It makes you realize that it could be you one day. You know, all those things, all those hard things. And we're not often given the opportunity just to really feel our grief. Mm-hmm. And have that be okay, because people don't want you to be sad. Even if it's not about them, they just don't like you being sad because it hurts them.
Yeah.
Right. And I found for me, again, around about the 3-year mark, and I had numerous conversations with my oldest daughter about where is this? I went to 5 different counselors at the beginning after Katie was killed. And it's not that they weren't good. I mean, they were good. They just didn't have what I needed. Mm-hmm. And so again, back to my daughter, I would have numerous conversations with her and saying, where is somebody that can just tell us the truth about it? Mm-hmm. I don't want textbook answers. I want someone that has experienced it and realize that, grief is a cycle. The 5 stages of grief, there's more than 5 stages of grief. And, it comes and goes. And there was a point at one time that I thought I was grieving wrong because I wasn't following these stages and, the textbook grief thing. And anyway, so after about 3 years, I just felt stronger. And thought, maybe I'm only 2 or 3 steps ahead of somebody else, but if I could help them and just even just show them that it's possible to get up each day or, to breathe or, to share your story. So then I started working with someone to help me, to teach me how to be a speaker, better express myself on stages or interviews like this or whatever. And that really began my journey, because the response from my first talk was, I don't want to say crazy, but it was significant.
Right.
For me, I was just sharing my story and the little bit of healing that I thought I had done. But for someone that's been living with it for 20 years and they hear somebody speaking that it's been, 3-4 years, and they're standing upright, it really gives them a lot of hope. But how did you do it, right? And so that's kind of what started it, is because I just found a little piece that I felt was missing for what I needed. And mostly it's just giving people permission to feel their grief and kind of hold their hand, because you feel like you're spiraling out of control and down to the I've often called it like a tsunami. That's how I felt in the really depths of my grief. It's just like, comes out of nowhere, slams you around, pulls you under into the darkness. You can't breathe. It throws you up. You know, like it's unbelievable sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then just having, you know, if you can have someone that can understand what you're saying, but not judge you with it, mm-hmm. because definitely everybody grieves differently. Because even within a family, like my daughter is grieving differently than my son, and I'm grieving differently than them, but we all had different relationships with Katie.
That's right.
And none of them is wrong. It's just not the way I do it, mm-hmm. but I can listen to you and I can support you.
One of the things I've noticed with grief, because the reason I believe someone grieves deeply is because they love deeply as well. So the more you care about something or someone, mm-hmm. and you lose that, the deeper the hurt is. And so once you've had a couple of those, and it could just simply be a childhood relationship that collapsed or a loss of a job that you really treasured, mm-hmm. there's the possibility and often the occurrence where the brain goes, I want to protect myself, and so let's not get too close.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the things I think your teachings help people is if you understand how to grieve, mm-hmm. then you suddenly brain goes, I have a tool. So I can now love somebody, something very deeply. That's and right. If I lose them, I now know how I can navigate that. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. 100%. In fact, I realized that early on with the triggers that would happen. So Katie was killed. So there was a trial and all that. So of course that was two and a half years. Length of different things. So there was constant triggers, whether it was from, you know, having to speak with the police again or go to court for different things, all of that. So constant triggers. And then I realized over time that after a certain, you know, major event that would happen that would pull me back under into my darkness of my grief, I could then reach into what I had used the last time it happened.
Right.
Like, how did I take that first step out mm-hmm. of the darkness? Or, you know, how can I prevent going 10 steps backwards? Maybe this time I can only go 8. Mm-hmm. And then each time, you know, being able to learn. So same thing with multiple, you know, over lifetime of grief or mm-hmm. tragic situations that you had to learn how to be strong, but not wanting to put up that armor. Right. Like that's what you don't want to do, because then that armor keeps everything out, whether it's the hurt and the pain. It also keeps the happiness and the sunshine.
Yeah. I also believe the armor, because nothing can get in. I believe the armor stops the emotions from getting out. Yeah. And so while the relief can't come in. More pain can't come in, but you can't let it flow through you. I guess that's right. Part of what it is. As I think about this, when you described it, is if there's no barriers, if I let them go, mm-hmm. and let the pain flow through, and let the love and let the optimism let it flow through mm-hmm. as well into it, I'm balanced.
Yes.
I'm not holding on to anything.
That's right.
When you want to hang on to it, I guess that goes. You know, the strongest love is when you give the person you love or the creature you love freedom. Mm-hmm. Then there's a security in that. Like it's a habit. It's a habit to kind of work with.
Yeah, no, it's something that needs to be done, mm-hmm. because if it's staying within you, like I had mentioned before, it becomes toxic. Now, whether it's physically toxic or just mentally or emotionally, spiritually toxic. And I think a lot of people can relate to knowing someone that has been hurt, whether it was through a relationship or loss of a loved one or whatever, that they they stay in an angry state. They don't want any connection with people. Like they're choosing that to protect themselves. And again, it's not wrong. It's just how they've chosen to deal with their pain, whatever it was. But with that armor, you're right. It can't get out.
Yeah.
So
nothing good can flow. Nothing can go into to replace the grief. Cause that's, right. I remember we've lost centers we're very close to over the years and family members. But you've got to let your heart stay open. Mm-hmm. And once it's open, it doesn't diminish the being that you are grieving for, I don't think, because I'm right. Nothing. You've got this huge capacity. So you can still let something of warmth in, and still cherish the memory of what you've lost. Does that sound?
Yes, 100%. That's so true. I've said a few times, how did I word it? Staying in your grief and darkness doesn't prove your love for
really good.
Whoever you've lost or relationship ending, whatever. You know, moving forward, being the best person that you can, maybe reaching out and helping others to like find your own path, but that doesn't prove anything. For me personally, if I would have stayed in the darkness of my grief, it would have almost been disrespectful to Katie, because you know she didn't have a choice. She didn't want to die, and it happened. So, like, how dare I then not, you know, honor her spirit and my own, and carry on and live life the best that I can, because she didn't have that choice. And if you knew her, she would have been really mad. But so that's part of it. I don't want her coming down to me and saying, "Ma, come on."
She was speaking too.
Yeah.
Now, do you, we're just coming close, which has been a fascinating kind of conversation. How can people reach you? Like, is it, like, do you just speak on tour? Is there workshops that you give?
I just speak, like, people just hire me to speak. Mm-hmm. Or quite often I'll speak at events if I just feel a connection to them. I'm more than happy to do that. I wrote a bit, a chapter in a book, so they could check that out too if they wanted to. But all of that's on my website. It's just Conversations with Shannon.
So we talked about that in our conversation. So people who are listening, if you go to the notes section of the podcast, I'll have listed all the ways you can reach her, more information you can get, paths to find your way through grief, all those kind of things, they'll be listed down there. So you do have a resource with this. But we talked about the conversation as a better phrase than dialogue or something. So how did you come across conversation as being the word you settled on?
I realized that that was part of my healing, is being able to speak. About what happened, speak about how I was feeling, again, with truth. And I just thought, you know, that is so true with so many things. Like sometimes people just speak. I find that I, a lot of times, will have aha moments just when I'm telling somebody something. And it's like, wow, I did that here with you. Right? When we went full circle that one time. So, I mean, the conversation has always been very important to me. And just with, you know, helping people with their grief, that's what worked for me. So I thought, that's a beautiful thing. And for calling my business Conversations with Shannon, it just showed people that I was open to have conversations. And I don't think there's a wrong or right conversation to have. And it's always up to the individual person to say, no, I don't want to go there. Because, you know, in numerous interviews that I've had, some of them really wanted to focus on who hurt Katie. And I'm very clear with my boundaries. And so to have a beautiful conversation means a lot. I think, like I said before, there's trust, there's vulnerability, there's healing, there's connection, respect. So yeah, I did that. And I thought it was a pretty easy thing to remember.
It is.
Quite honest.
It's got that ring to it. It's got
And anybody that knows me knows I like to have a conversation.
Yeah. And that's really how people connect. It's you know, you can demonstrate things and do things, but the conversations, out of conversation comes promises to do things, comes promises to connect in the future as you kind of get deeper. There's aha moments that come out of it. There's a lot that happens in a conversation that's a real conversation.
Yes.
You know,
there's a lot of the not feeling alone. In what you're going through, like even just knowing that someone's willing to listen, they might not have had the same experience or anything, but you don't feel so alone when you have someone to share, because it's almost like they're carrying some of your grief, your burden, whatever it is, right? When you're having that conversation. So it's very intimate sometimes too, you know,
it is.
You really get to know that person's soul.
If you're both prepared to, again, be vulnerable, mm-hmm. be expressive, the conversations can get really fascinating. Mm-hmm. One guy was talking about the ability we have, the ability to hold two opposing thoughts in our mind at the same time is powerful, because you can talk to someone who you actually disagree with, you think, and you get down to the core of why something drives them, and then you can say, oh, I understand now.
Exactly.
But if nothing else, it's the quest to understand. Like, that's what this conversation here's been about. It's like, well, you know, kind of like, well, tell me more. And the key question, there's phrases I found are really powerful. Like, well, tell me more. Like, how does that work? How do you feel when you do that? You know, what do you expect of people when you do that? These, and they just trigger as people respond to them.
Yes. And allowing them then the time to respond to them is hugely important, because then if you don't give people time to respond to your questions, then they already know that you're not really wanting the answer.
Yeah.
You already assume the answer and you're thinking about what to ask them next. And it's hard for some people to be patient and wait for that person to collect their thoughts, which when you're working with somebody in grief, mm-hmm. like the mind is very affected by trauma.
Oh, yes.
Not just grief, but any kind of trauma. So sometimes you have to give them a couple seconds to collect their thoughts. And that's very uncomfortable for a lot of people.
It's the thing in sales, we've encountered that a lot. And I think most people now have heard this, that whoever, you know, the last person, when a question is asked, the next person to talk blinks or loses or something like that. But it's from a sales technique. I think it's a bit old fashioned with it. But the core of what you're talking about is that you need to, like, ask your question and then shut up.
Yes.
And however long it takes for the person to, and I've found that the longer that takes, when a person, like, because I'll ask a question and then there's a glib answer comes, like a person's got 25 glib answers, any kind of thing. And they'll ask a question and there's a pause, and part of the pause is them deciding internally, am I going to share something this deep? Mm-hmm. And how am I going to phrase it? And what's it really, what's my really mean to it? So I found if there is a pause on a tough question, it usually means I'm going to get an honest, a really good answer.
Yes. And that's what I was going to say. It usually means you're going to get their truth.
Yeah. Yeah. When they have time, and when you've given them time, I think mm-hmm. the second you ask a question and then give someone a chance to respond to it, and then listen as they're responding to it, they, as you said, they get a feeling that I am being listened to. This is now an important conversation.
And sometimes you don't get the answer that you think you're going to get. And then that just, like, heightens the conversation, because then I want to know more, right?
That's right. Where's this going to go?
Yeah. Even if it's not something, like you said, something that I agree with. Yeah. But what's your perspective? How did you come up with that perspective? What am I maybe missing? Mm-hmm. Maybe my perspective is wrong and I need to learn from you.
Yes. That's where the growth
comes. Fascinating thing.
It is. And when you sit back and go, well, how did you get there? I've also found that if you're in a very tense situation, a couple of open-ended questions diffuse it. Like people go, well, okay, so you do want to know how I feel. Let me tell you now. And so it's kind of huge.
Yeah. Giving them permission. Right?
It's right.
Yeah.
This is a conversation that could go for a long time.
Yeah.
All my category of fascinating women. It's been just adorable. So I'm Mark Laurie again from Inner Spirit Photography, doing the Fascinating Women podcast. And this is Shannon Miller. You'll find her on the website called Conversation with Shannon. And her, I guess, travel in life these days is grief, helping people understand that it's okay, understand what the process to go through with, that there is no set formula. And it's been a delight having you on, Shannon. It's been great.
Thank you so much. It was a great conversation.
It was good.
This has been Fascinating Women with Mark Laurie. Join us on our website and subscribe at fascinatingwomen.ca. Fascinating Women has been sponsored by Inner Spirit Photography of Calgary, Alberta, and is produced in Calgary by Lee Ellis and My Office Media.